Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, July 13th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, guess what I did on Sunday? I made reservations to travel.
Whoa!
It was a kind of a weird moment where I'm going to the Marriott website and I'm looking for a place to stay down in Washington, D.C. because our first broadcast is scheduled to be on July 23rd. We've got the first game. We've got the Yankees playing at the Nationals. It was just kind of weird. Wow. I got to tell you.
Yeah. I mean, you got
old habits.
Got to bust out the old company card. That probably has some dust collecting on it. Do you know what your situation is going to be for the game? Are we going to have a Buster cam while you sit in the outfield all by yourself?
I have not heard the specifics on that. And given the fact that we are, 10, 11 days away from that, I just know how business works and I'm not going to ask for another week.
All right.
I don't really need to know. And I suspect that they probably haven't completely figured it out. But I will tell you that, it would definitely be cool to be in a ballpark for some baseball after everything we've been going through here in the recent months.
Yeah, I'm excited for you.
Yeah, and the next day I'd actually drive back from Washington, and then I work on my home cam. We're going to be doing the Brewers and Cubs, and then Sunday night baseball on what would be the 26th. We'd have the Giants and the Dodgers, so that's definitely something to look forward to after a busy weekend of news. On Friday, we learned that Buster Posey, the Giants' all-star catcher, future Hall of Famer, is opting out, and we learned that from Buster.
So I know it's been mentioned how I've missed several practices over the last week, and I want to address that. A week ago today, identical twin girls were born that my wife and I are adopting, and the adoption actually became official yesterday afternoon, and my wife, myself, and our older children are just overwhelmed with joy to welcome them to our family, to love them unconditionally, and just share life with them. The twins were born prematurely. Thank God they are doing really well, but they're going to have to be in the NICU for quite some time. And after much discussion with my wife and doctors, a decision that I've wrestled with quite a bit since I knew that this adoption was on the table, I've decided to opt out of the 2020 baseball season. We feel this is the best decision for these babies and for our family as well.
The Astros canceled a workout Saturday because of COVID concerns. Dusty Baker talked on Sunday about the Astros situation.
You know, we're doing what we could do, and we're doing it with the people that we can do it with, the people that are available. So, we got to continue to get the guys ready that are here. The guys are they had a great attitude about things, no complaining. Everybody that was supposed to show up showed up. And you don't like it, but at the same time, you have to adjust. And, you have to make the best of a potentially bad situation. And, I'm proud of the guys on how they responded.
Over the weekend, two players who had passed intake testing and had been around teammates tested positive. Aroldis Chapman of the Yankees and Royals catcher Cam Gallagher will be talking with Marley Rivera of ESPN about Aroldis Chapman's situation and about the concerns the Yankees have about that. Cubs starter Yu Darvish spoke with reporters on Sunday, and he said that he was swayed to report to camp after seeing how seriously his teammates were taking matters. His quote was, through an interpreter, "It was a tough decision, but everyone is doing it. Everyone has concerns, but everyone decided to play, so it makes it easier for me to make a decision to play. I still have concerns." Kenley Jansen reported to camp with the rest of his Los Angeles Dodgers teammates on Sunday and revealed that he was delayed because he had previously tested positive for COVID-19. Chicago White Sox pitcher Michael Kopech opted out of the 2020 season, the team announced on Friday. Rick Hahn's quote, the general manager of the White Sox, "We recognize that reaching this decision is incredibly difficult for any competitive athlete, and our organization is understanding and supportive." And again, for context, in relation to the question of why Major League Baseball faces a different challenge than KBO in South Korea, South Korea is a country of about 52 million people. There have been fewer than 14,000 coronavirus cases total since the start of the crisis. 14,000 coronavirus cases total since the start of the crisis. The state of Florida reported on Sunday alone over 15,000. We're going to be talking with reporters about that, including Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. But before that, season 8 of ESPN's latest 30 for 30 podcast is nearly here. Heavy Metals Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire. It's a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bela and Marta Caroli, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA gymnastics history. Subscribe now to the 30 for 30 Feet on Apple Podcasts to listen to the trailer. The whole season drops Tuesday, July 14th on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Gregor Chisholm is a columnist for the Toronto Star. And Gregor, first off, how are you doing this morning?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Look, we're going to be getting to some of the conversation around the Jays and where they're going to play and what Travis Shaw said on Friday and then what he said on Sunday. But let's start out with some pure baseball. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., over the weekend, the Blue Jays announcing that he is being switched to first base. For me, and I'm from far, I'm not locked in close to it the way you are, but it was surprising, the timing of this. What was behind that?
Yeah, it was a little bit surprising. And, you know, I think this really actually goes back to, you know, the original spring training of this year. The Blue Jays were playing him a little bit more at first base, kind of a little bit under the radar. And I think they had been pondering this move at some point this year. And I think they looked at this as an opportunity, an abbreviated season, an opportunity to move him over there. And what this really does is I think it opens the door for next year to kind of move forward with the young core that they have. The Blue Jays have some young prospects on the way in Jordan Groshans. Austin Martin obviously just recently joined the organization as their first round pick. So they've got some options moving forward, and really for this team to take the next step, I don't think having Guerrero at third base is going to be tenable for that much longer. And so I think they decided that they needed to make this move. And then, you know, also seeing how he came into camp earlier this year, you know, his conditioning was a little bit better. I think long-term though, they just realized that, you know, the body type, the mobility just wasn't really going to play there at third base long-term. And you know, I think a lot of us saw this move coming. It's just a little bit surprising that it came this soon, but I think long-term it still makes sense.
I like the fact that they tried, you know, that to me, it was, there was no reason why not to try.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, I look at this as almost the way that, you know, you were with a starting pitcher coming up through the minor leagues. There might be a guy who you think is destined for the bullpen for sure as a lights out closer, but, you know, you want to try and develop him as a starter first. You want to see if he can develop that third pitch. Well, with Guerrero, I mean, there really was nothing to lose. I mean, I think putting him at third base, I mean, this is a guy who came up through the minor leagues with such little adversity. I mean, things came so easy for him at the plate. I think by putting him at third base, the Blue Jays tried to create a little adversity for him to get through. And so I think they challenged him, especially on the conditioning side, to see if they could get at least a few years out of him at third base. And look, I think a lot of us knew this wasn't really going to work out for a while now, but there was no harm in trying. And now he gets back to, I think, what, you know, is going to be his bread and butter, obviously, is he's going to be able to focus more on the bat. You know, I think he might have a little bit issue with the footwork at first base, but you can try it a little bit in this abbreviated season. You know, the Blue Jays still have Travis Shaw, who can move over to first base if necessary. They've got Rowdy Tellez, who can split time with him at first base. So I think he's still going to get a lot of the bats at DH, too. They're going to be able to ease him in at first base. But, yeah, like you said, no harm, no foul here, in my opinion.
All right. So where do the Blue Jays stand now in terms of where they're going to play this year? Because it seems like a lot of teams, they're looking for potential plan Bs, plan Cs, plan Ds, because baseball is completely at the mercy of these federal, municipal, state guidelines, mandates regarding COVID.
Yeah, it really is quite a mess up here right now, to be honest with you. And I mean, Buffalo was ruled out a couple of weeks ago by Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro, and now it appears to be back on the table. And that just is a sign of how quickly things move up here. And, you know, I think all along throughout this early on, the Blue Jays plan, I think, was the play in Dunedin. I think that was, you know, before things really took off in Florida with the cases where it went through the roof. You know, I think that's the direction that they were leaning. And then, You know, as we saw, as the season got closer and this training camp got closer to becoming a reality, that just wasn't going to work for the Jays. And so there was a last minute scramble to come up here. But the Jays came up here without, you know, any assurances for the regular season. And we saw, you know, some of the controversy that started this week with Travis Shaw. Obviously, the players weren't fully aware of the situation that they were walking into as well. And right now, this team is in limbo, waiting for approval from the federal government. It really seems to be totally up in the air as to where they're going to end up. I mean, the club's priority is to try and play baseball in Toronto. It remains to be seen whether or not they can get full support from their players for that as well, because it's going to require some strict quarantine and some sacrifices throughout the season. But there's a lot to take in, and really it could go either way here, I think.
So on Friday, in response to the news that was posted that, you know, players would face significant fines, perhaps jail time, if they were to go outside of the, I mean, I guess we're referred to as sort of like the Blue Jays bubble outside of their team hotel area, Travis Shaw posted some questions on Twitter, basically indicating, well, that wouldn't work long term, that sort of thing. But yesterday he walked that back. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, he did walk it back, and he called the comments tone deaf. And I mean, the what some people might not fully understand is, so up here in Canada, for the COVID stuff, anybody crossing the border, I mean, there is a $750,000 fine and possibility of jail time if you break the quarantine that you've agreed to enter coming into this country. And that's just the way that we've been handling the quarantine situation up here for a while. It applies to everybody. Those are the maximum fines. And the Blue Jays were supposedly told that, you know, that's what they could be in line to get. And I think a lot of this comes down to a communication issue. I mean, the players thought they were coming up here for 2 weeks of training camp. It's a little bit unclear what they thought exactly was going to happen after that. But look, this quarantine situation, I don't think is going to change up here. I mean, you look at Florida, over 15,000 cases. You know, in Canada, we've been pretty consistently in the 200s for the last several weeks now. And I think there's a lot of concern from public health about what happens. I mean, Toronto approved the hub city for the NHL. And obviously there's a bubble city going on with the NBA, but those two situations are very different compared to Major League Baseball, because the Blue Jays and the other team is going to be crossing the border on a regular basis. And, you know, I think what happened with Travis Shaw is, I'm pretty sure the Blue Jays sat down and talked with him and basically, you know, informed him that he's not helping their cause whatsoever. With the public comments, because, you know, the Jays need the Canadian government on board with this. Obviously, the lack of communication within the organization itself kind of didn't properly explain that situation. But if you're going to give the players the option of going back to Florida where the cases are the way they are, or living in a Toronto hotel for half of this summer, because they're obviously going to be on the road in the States for the other half, you know, I think a lot of players are still going to pick the tricky quarantine situation up here, but it's not ideal for anybody.
No, and look, because the Jays are the home team, that's the team that, you know, knuckleheads like me have been focused on as we've talked about the complications of this situation. But really, the real maze happens for visiting teams. Like, that's the part that I feel like has been totally overlooked in this whole thing. Like, if you're the, you know, Canadian government and you have a traveling band of, 50 people from Tampa Bay Rays or, you know, mm-hmm. some other place around the country, I don't know how you deal with that, you know, not only in terms of actually keeping people healthy, but politically, that's such a difficult issue.
100%. I could not agree with you more. Look, I think it's difficult to even get buy-in from the Blue Jays, but it's possible because you can tell them to look at the scenarios and the alternatives that they have and say that this, you know, Toronto in a quarantine situation is your best bet to one, stay healthy, but also to have, you know, somewhat enjoyable summer. But the visiting teams coming through, I mean, they're under none of the same obligations. I mean, legally speaking, they might be kind of forced into that, but at the same time, I just don't think you have the same level of respect. I mean, you're going to have all these guys coming in. I don't believe for a second that you're not going to have guys, you know, inviting people over to their hotel, trying to find, you know, a way to sneak out. I mean, Marcus Stroman, former Blue Jay, was joking about it last week. You're going to have guys in disguise. You know, it's a little, it's kind of said half jokingly, but at the same time, I mean, in reality, how are you going to have people? I mean, Travis Shaw has been up here for a little over a week now in this situation. The news of the fine and the possible jail time this summer still came as a surprise to him. I don't believe, you know, regardless of what teams tell their players throughout the summer, that they're necessarily going to be fully educated on the matter. I think they're going to tune it out a little bit. I mean, we see that players coming up to this country all the time. I mean, they kind of already live in a little bit of their own isolation bubble. So I think they're going to have serious problems with that. And if I was the Canadian government, I mean, that's the thing I would be having the problem with the most is, you know, if Mark Shapiro and the Blue Jays are lobbying to stay up here, well, you can control your own team, but what kind of assurances are we going to get that all the visiting teams coming through this city are going to be controlled as well? And that's where my issue would be for sure.
And by the way, they will appear more reasonable as well, Canadian government, because they are working with the NHL. So it's not like they're no sports. It's not like they're shutting everything down. I think that probably makes it easier for them to say no to, you know, another sports team, another league. Last one for you. I wrote over the weekend that I really feel like the Rob Manfred and Tony Clark, who are the two, you know, leaders in the sport, need to be out in the front of these conversations. That it's so awkward in so many respects for Ross Atkins, for Mark Shapiro, to be the front men in these conversations. And I mentioned just living here in New York that, you know, Governor Cuomo gave daily updates, and that was really important. And the Blue Jay situation is one where I feel like that someone higher up in baseball should be answering these questions. What do you think as a columnist?
Absolutely. You know, it often feels like the Blue Jays or the Canadian baseball in general kind of is a bit of an afterthought at some times. Certainly not a conspiracy theorist to think, like some up here that think that MLB has something against the Blue Jays or the city of Toronto or anything like that. I think just often when there's a lot of these, you know, agreements that need to be worked out, there's a lot of extra things that apply to Toronto and Canada that don't necessarily apply to the rest of the league. And as this entire agreement was going on and this return to play, you know, a lot of people up here were expecting problems like that because it was something you didn't hear about a lot. And then you would hear government officials up here being asked about it. And they would say that they hadn't really been in touch with anybody from Major League Baseball. They were still waiting for official documents. You have people in the city saying that they had talked to Mark Shapiro and the Blue Jays, but there's very little talk about what was coming from the league. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily something that should completely just fall on the Blue Jays. I certainly think Tony Clark should be involved in this heavily as well, because I mean, just look at how the players were caught off guard this week. I mean, there's going to need to be an awful lot of level education for these players coming through the city and understand what's being asked of them. And I don't think that message is getting across right now. I think a lot of people were surprised by this news. I think Tony Clark should be heavily involved. I think Rob Manfred should be providing regular updates because there's just been a lack of clarity up here. And I mean, here we are like a week and a half from the starting of the regular season. And people up here still don't know. I mean, Travis Shaw didn't know 2 days ago. Nobody in the media really knows what's going on. The fan base doesn't know what's going on. I mean, Mark Shapiro and them are trying to provide some kind of level of update, but I think this goes above their pay grade to a certain extent. It would be, I totally agree with you. It'd be great to hear more from Manfred. It'd be great to hear more from Tony Clark about what's exactly going to happen here in the very near future.
All right, Gregor. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Marley Rivera covers baseball for ESPN and spends a lot of time around the Yankees. And that over the weekend, Marley, meant reporting on Aroldis Chapman testing positive for COVID-19. What can you tell us?
Well, Buster, precisely what you're saying, they announced Aaron Boone. As we know, teams are not allowed to mention the player names that have tested positive for COVID-19. So Aroldis Chapman authorized the Yankees, and now we know that he is the third major leaguer to test positive for the Yankees. We do know that pitcher Luis Sessa and all-star infielder DJ LeMahieu had tested positive even before the intake testing or the process in order to be admitted to this quote-unquote summer camp at Yankee Stadium started. So we do know that those two players had not even been at Yankee Stadium, but Aroldis was. Aroldis had gone through the entire intake testing, had tested negative, was at the stadium starting last, you know, between Saturday and Sunday of last week, and worked out during the week and even addressed the media on Tuesday. So has been a part of that monitoring process or the second batch of testing that started. And that is where Aroldis Chapman tested positive. Now, the good thing for the Yankees, and quote unquote good thing, is that I was talking to Aroldis yesterday and to his right-hand man, who is his personal trainer, and he actually, the personal trainer, tested negative. So that is definitely a positive for the Yankees, because it means that Aroldis has been taking care of himself and of all the measures, because obviously if the personal trainer who's with him all the time tests negative, that's probably a really good thing. But it just shows us, Buster, that things can change very, very quickly.
First and foremost, how is Aroldis feeling based on your conversation yesterday? And two, is there any sense of how long he might be out?
He has no idea. And it is one of those things, another one of those cases, Buster, that we've heard, that he is basically asymptomatic. He said the words, precise words that he used in Spanish, obviously, were very little symptoms. So he said, you know, he's like, basically, you can't really tell that I'm sick whatsoever. And that's what we've heard about this disease, right? Constantly. That's what's happening with this virus, that all these people, especially these very healthy athletes, who are not probably, you know, going to be in any danger of suffering any complications out of COVID-19, but the problems that you could be contagious towards other people. So that's certainly, now Aroldis has to go through this entire process detailed in the operations manual, where you have to be isolated and you have to go through this process of testing negative 3 times before you're even allowed to rejoin the team. So it's kind of interesting, right, that this is the first positive that we've heard in the Yankees in this monitoring phase. But we'll see what happens from over here. But we kept asking Aaron Boone, you know, what is this like? What do you have to deal with? And basically they're saying, we didn't expect to go through the entire summer camp without a single positive. So this is something that we're just dealing with. And if someone can handle the absence of an Aroldis Chapman, it is the relief corps that the Yankees have, and they're considering right now using Zach Britton if Aroldis is not able to go in that closer position.
So the one thing I just want to make sure people realize, that the reason why there was so much, I think, you know, ripples throughout baseball because of the news about Aroldis Chapman and Cam Gallagher of the Kansas City Royals on Saturday is because these guys were around their teammates.
Yes.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, leading up to the positive test. Yes. What kind of ripples did you feel from the rest of the organization?
So far, we were able to speak, as you know, Buster, to just very few of them. But when we asked straight up, for example, to a Jay Happ, or, you know, we even asked outfielder Aaron Hicks on Zoom, of course, we have no access to the players. They actually sounded pretty calm. Like if you went straight up and one of my colleagues asked Aaron Hicks, you sit down now and think about, what did I touch? Was I around Aroldis? You know, are you constantly kind of worried about that? And Aaron Hicks is a perfect example, because Aaron Hicks has two very small children, including a baby that he just had his second child a couple of months ago. And we asked them, you know, how are you feel about this? Are you concerned? And they're basically saying, you know what, we are not concerned. We understand that this was something that could have happened, and we are taking the precautions forward, and we're taking care of each other. I mean, we saw it from Clint Frazier and from other players who prefer to wear the mask all the time, even when they're on the field playing. You will see some of those players, they're the minority, but they're also doing it. So there's a lot of, you know, they're saying that they're taking a lot of care of themselves and just following old protocols, and they believe that they can contain somehow this virus. But I mean, like you said, Buster, these are guys that tested negative in the beginning, that went through the intake testing and then tested positive later on. And we don't know where the interaction for this positive testing happened. You know, these guys are supposedly also in this bubble. and trying to be very careful and very protected. So that is the problem. And that's the reason where there's all those ripple effects around baseball, because we are concerned that this is something, these numbers could continue to grow every day.
Now, I've got a couple of quick baseball questions for you, not related to this, but I just want to, just as a reporter covering this, and I feel this, I get this response in social media all the time where people are like, just, you know, we don't want to hear the medical updates about COVID. You know, you're a baseball reporter. And my response is, that is baseball in 2020. You cannot separate it. Ken Rosenthal wrote a piece for The Athletic over the weekend about how teams like the Diamondbacks, scrambling to fill in perhaps some of the gaps in their testing resources, have arranged for their own lab work. And that begins to beg the question, why do the Diamondbacks have access to testing when so many in Arizona do not? Are they taking access away from others? It's all intertwined, it feels like.
Yes. And that's exactly it, Buster. The moment that we start as journalists getting our fever, you know, like our temperature taken a couple of times before you go into a stadium, the moment we have to fill out paperwork saying that we have not been in contact with anyone who has tested positive for COVID-19, among other, you know, just a very long list of questions that we have to answer constantly, that moment is stopped being about sports. That moment, it actually, COVID has become a part of our lives too. And it is something that we constantly have to report on when we have to be in a press box where we cannot remove our mask, you know, right? We are doing these Zoom calls with players. And at the same time, we're doing this on the press box with masks on and with our own, you know, headsets and microphones on, because we have to protect everyone else. Then it's no longer only about baseball, right? Like, we actually, this has colored our entire lives. And if I'm going to tell you so-and-so tested positive and these are the numbers, that is just a fact of baseball right now, right? That is the importance of these guys testing positive. It is as impactful or maybe more than any other injury would have been for any team. So it is certainly our job, Buster, to actually report on this. It has to be.
Right? Yes. Really, Tommy John surgeries are not contagious. Yes. Hamstring pulls are not contagious. Although Mets fans might disagree through the year. Just kidding. Two quick 30-second ones for you. Giancarlo Stanton, to me, looks to be in spectacular condition. I noticed it the first time I was watching one of the workouts that are broadcast on Yes. You're like, wow, his body looks like it's changed dramatically since the beginning of spring training. More lean, maybe more baseball-oriented.
Absolutely, Buster. And that's something that he really needs to do, right? The flexibility aspect has been an issue for Giancarlo. No one can ever question Giancarlo Stanton's fitness. The level of fitness that this man has had his entire life and career is incredible. But now he's dealt a lot with that soft tissue stuff, you know, and trying to be very flexible, which is something that's really going to help him. And absolutely, Buster, since Giancarlo got to the Yankees, this is the best I've seen him look. Now we know that there's been a lot of lower body complications with him, you know, limited to less than 20 games last year. We know he tweaked that calf in the spring, but I agree with you. It will be nice to see him out there, but the Yankees do have to take it easy. We know what's happening right at the plate. They don't have their timing yet. I would not put Giancarlo Stanton out there just yet, but it is fantastic to see him doing well.
And Aaron Judge, what's the update on him?
Well, the latest is still that neck is still bothering him. The Yankees are not having an intra-squad game today. They may have another one tomorrow. They're only going to do batting practice. And, you know, Aaron Boone says he expects him to be out there, that he just slept on this neck wrong. But one of the things that happens with the Yankees, Buster, you know this better than anyone, is that sometimes they downplay injury. And this is something that we really, really know, that, you know, at times, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, it happened with him, it happened with Aaron Judge, that we hear about this, you know, this problem with the rib, and then we hear about a punctured lung, and then we hear he would have never have been available this season if we had had a regular opening day in March. So all the Yankee fans are particularly concerned, especially after last year when they set a record, right, sending 30 players into the injured list. So it is a major concern for any Yankee fan to see someone like Aaron Judge outside the lineup. But supposedly, and this is what Aaron Boone is saying, everything is going to be okay, and he should be in there in that lineup either tomorrow or the day after.
All right, Marley. Good to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, guys. Talk to you soon.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Mark Topkin covers the Tampa Bay Rays for the Tampa Bay Times. And Mark, I'll ask you the same question with concern that people are asking me as a resident of New York back in March and April. How are you doing down in the state of Florida with everything going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, Buster, in probably polite terms, it's a mess down here. And I think without offering my opinions on government policy here, but there was a rush to reopen and advance the stages of reopening. And there's been a terrible uptick and spike in cases here. 15,000 reported on Sunday just in the state of Florida alone. And people got too aggressive. I think they kind of got tired of it and decided they were done with it. And unfortunately, that's not the way it works with a virus, as we're all seeing.
Tell me how that's affected how you social distance, protect yourself on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, as you know, Buster, you've done this longer than I have, is it changes everything about your job professionally and just personally. I mean, I think maybe I stopped for gas once in the last week, and that's been it. Luckily, my wife's been the one to make the grocery store runs and things like that. But, you know, you just don't know, and you don't, I think, not knowing. I mean, here we are, we're working in the press box. The Rays are doing a great job. You know, they sanitize it or clean it at the end of the day. There's an attendant here who wipes things down at times, but you know, you just don't know. And I think, you know, anyone who has gone back to work on any basis would share the same concerns I have, that no one seems to really know exactly what best practices are.
I wrote a column on Sunday about how I feel like in baseball right now, there's a beachhead of hope and there's a mountain of uncertainty. And you just spoke to that. And the Rays, me, are one of the teams that are the epitome of that. You know better than I do. There's a great clubhouse culture there. Kevin Cash, terrific manager, incredible organization. And yet, as you wrote in a piece over the weekend, there's just so much going on and so much uncertainty about who's available, who's not available, where this guy, where's that guy.
Yeah, and look, teams have handled this differently, and I don't know that, you know, any of us can say what is the right way or the wrong way, but the Rays have opted for a very strict policy. They're not disclosing, not only are they not disclosing players who test positive, as some teams are, with the player's permission, or disclosing a general number of players who test positive, which teams can do on their own, they're not saying anything. They're not telling us, even to verify what we see. They're not saying who's here, who's not here. They obviously are using the trop. They're using Port Charlotte, which, you know, being 90 miles away, players are staying down there, so they're not all like reporting here and then just, you know, going to another facility to work out. They've been doing some work outside here at the trop, some conditioning, things like that, where they're outside. And from what we've been told, we'll never see them like on that given day. They'll come in, go do that, and just leave without ever coming on the field. So our reporting is limited to who we see on the field. That being said, there's four pretty key players, or certainly three of the four, who have not been seen on the field at all. So they're, you know, in theory, been missing for a week and a half. Austin Meadows, co-team MVP last year, was seen on the field the first day, and he hasn't been seen back since. And then there's a couple other guys just in the last 5-6 days who haven't been around, Diego Castillo and Brendan McKay. So, you know, there's seven players, including Glasnow, Chirinos, Brendan McKay, Austin Meadows, Jose Martinez. You know, if any of all or all of those guys end up being unable to start the season, and look, it's more serious than being unable to start the season, obviously, if they end up being sick and that too. But, you know, that's going to have a significant impact on this team. And that uncertainty, we're looking at it from the media standpoint, but I don't know that it's any much better for Kevin Cash and Eric Neander in the front office. Is how many plans do you make? Do you literally have to make a plan for every single option of a guy not being available to start the season and kind of have 40 or 50 different roster permutations?
Man, oh man. Yeah, 100%. Now, they're probably, because of the way that the Rays do their work, they're probably as well prepared for that sort of situation as any team would be. But you're right. You know, so much on a daily basis that they're not going to know. As you mentioned, you and I have been covering this sport for a long time. And I'm curious about your feelings about the transparency aspect of this. I wrote a column over the weekend in which I said that I really feel like the Rob Manfred, Tony Clark need to be out front on this thing on a regular basis, because it's not only about, you know, giving information to media and fans, but I sense so much unease among the players and the staffers because they don't know what's going on. You know, we were just talking a little while ago about the Toronto Blue Jays situation And it was clear from Travis Shaw's response that he didn't know a lot of what was going on with the rules. And I think that's desperately needed in this moment. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt on the Blue Jay situation. I mean, that is just, you know, for the players, for their families. I mean, take the fans out of it, but just for the people in the organization and their families. I mean, where are they going to be? There's been so many scenarios. That one's a mess overall. But I think baseball in general, I mean, I don't know. I think if I was on the team, I would want to know who has it, who doesn't, who's being isolated because they might have had it, who might have been exposed. Maybe if you tell me that player X is being isolated for 3 or 4 days because he might have been exposed to player Y, maybe that makes me say, you know what? I actually ran into those guys when I stopped for food the other day and we stopped and talked for 15 minutes. Maybe I need to be isolated too. I mean, maybe it helps, but I think by keeping it secret that that baseball is stigmatizing this too. I mean, there's 15,000 people just in the state of Florida yesterday who tested positive. To share the information that some of these players have tested positive and let them tell their stories. I mean, I think a 25-year-old, incredibly well-conditioned professional athlete coming out and telling people, hey, this disease is serious. This kicked my butt. You guys need to be careful. Like, I wish I hadn't, you know, gone out one day without a mask. I mean, whatever their story is, I think having that out there from recognizable faces and young, healthy individuals will help help the whole fight against the virus. And I think baseball can help that by being more transparent.
And I'm curious to see if you agree with me on this. I feel like, and look, the Rays, because of the numbers that are going on in Florida, the Marlins are going to, you know, be facing the same thing. They're going to be eyebrows raised every time, you know, those two particular teams travel right now because of what's going on with COVID there. And I feel like there's an ethical responsibility, you know, as these municipalities, states are putting in these mandates on quarantine. If I'm the governor of Massachusetts, I want to know what the Tampa Bay Rays history has been in relation to the coronavirus if they're coming into my state.
Well, and what happens when one of these politicians, whomever it is, decides they're not going to make an exception for pro athletes, as like, you know, Governor Cuomo in New York said he would and allow teams to come in and out and not have to follow the 14-day quarantine. What if a person in another state decides they're not going to allow that? Then does the MLB have to adjust the schedule? Do they have to change where these games are going to be played? So I think there's an ethical responsibility. I think there's a logistical issue. I think there's several factors, and the more transparent, the better. And then, you know, I don't know what the situation is going to be. You asked about, or you said teams, you know, the Rays going to Boston. What are the people in Boston? Well, what do the Boston Red Sox think about coming down here
right, and
having to spend 3 or 4 days in this area? So I think the converse of that is equally concerning to some of these teams, or it will be as this goes forward.
All right, Mark. Well, stay safe. I'll be thinking of you.
All right, Buster. Thank you. See you soon, or at least on a Zoom call.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. We got a good batch here. Let's go with Nick Gorrell first. He writes in, no doubt the designated hitter will reduce the pinch hitter role in the National League. How do you think this will impact guys like Kike Hernandez, who has great value coming off the bench, a good hitter who can play multiple positions? Some guys build solid careers with a skill set like that.
Yeah, Nick, I think you're right that it's going to affect them to some degree. I don't think it's going to be as much as maybe folks would anticipate, though, because so many teams in recent years have really worked to get the best possible matchups against particular pitchers and particular situations. And Kike hammers lefties. So I do think that, you know, if there's a left-handed hitter up and the opposing team brings up a lefty, Kike at that point will become an option. Rather than in the past, you essentially a guy like him starts a game on the bench and you're just waiting to pinch hit for the pitcher. I think that there are more pinch hitting opportunities now because of how teams seek really aggressive matchups during the course of games.
Next up, John Gillespie at Johnny G05. I'm sorry, John, I didn't really understand the first part of your question, but I think this next part is extremely pertinent and should be answered. As a San Francisco Giants fan, should the Giants play Bart as starting catcher since Posey is out?
John, I would not. Look, I think, you know, the position of catcher, it takes a long time to develop players, and he's played 22 games above Class A. I think he needs more time in the minor leagues, and let's face it, from the Giants' perspective, I don't think they're looking at this year as being the year when they're going to go for it. They're in development. They're still rebuilding. And so I would keep him down and continue to develop him.
kind of a general observation here from our pal Reggie Deal at Baseball Nerd 07. He writes in, Buster had the Dodgers intra-squad feed on, no piped-in background noise. It was like golf. You heard chirping birds and a yell from Kershaw when he missed his spot and a ball was fouled back. I loved it. Just give us the PA announcer, organ music. No need for more. What do you think about this? Where do you stand on the great crowd noise music debate here?
No crowd noise. I would love, and I talked about this with Matt Viscursion. I talked about it with Carl. I've talked about it with Boog Shambi. I would love to hear the conversation on the field, right? In the same way, and Reggie, thank you for the golf comparison. That's absolutely perfect. Like, it's a cool thing, and there are times when you'll be watching a golf tournament, and you'll hear one of the golfers say something to his caddy or back and forth, and you can sort of eavesdrop on that. I would love for that to be happening in baseball. I do think that the players, generally speaking, would benefit from the energy, from the music, but for me as a viewer, the less is more. The less fed in sound, I think, would be better for the product.
What do you think if they go somewhere in between? You know, I've been watching some MLS, and you know, they don't pipe in the crowd noise, but they have like it's like a half-hearted mic'd up situation, so you can kind of hear a little bit of what they're saying. Would you rather have that or some fake crowd noise?
I personally would prefer they just mic up the players, but we don't anything formal, any indication they've actually agreed to do that. Despite everything going on, and this would be a year, as we've been talking about since March, how great it would be, we still don't know if that's going to happen.
Last one up for today, another submission to the Cleveland naming saga that we've been detailing here on the podcast. Zane at Liberty Zane throws the Cleveland Flaming Rivers into the mix. And I like this name on first glance, but Buster, what did Jonathan Wikipedia or Bob Google tell you about this name?
That the Cuyahoga River caught on fire because of pollution in the river. That's the history of that. Now I've heard of that before. When I saw the name, I was like, there's gotta be some backstory. And then in doing the reading this morning, I know you did too. That was an interesting part of it. I don't know if that's what you want to call attention to.
Yeah, it sounds cool, but you take 1 second of research and it kind of ruins it. So hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Much appreciated.
That's it for today. My thanks to Gregor, to Marley, to Mark, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.